Murdoch University is the provider of resources and transmission facilities for the Six Points podcast. The views expressed on the show are those of the individual and not necessarily those of Murdoch University or Radio Murdoch. All views expressed are those of the individual unless otherwise stated.
There's a spillage across half-back for Adelaide pit the ball up. Matt White now running down the wing of Etihad Stadium. He takes a bounce, takes a second bounce. Richmond might catch him. Here he's burnt off his opponent. Matt White takes a third bounce, runs inside the 50 from 49 metres out. He unloads, open goal square, goal!
Ebert pumps it into the forward 50, Wingard. Oh, Wingard! Oh, baby, there's your mark of the year. Get around him, boys. Oh, he's played on. Oh, he's kicked it anyway. Wingard, what a star.
Good Tuesday, footy fans. Welcome to the 6 points for another week. My name is Robert Beaver, and across the desk in the studio this morning, a man who spent all of Sunday afternoon crying and wiping away his tears.
Long day, Sunday, and very nearly didn't make it in today, Robert.
My co-host, Sean Subra. I am, of course, referring to the Western Bulldogs Adelaide Crows clash, the one that we personally had the most on the line for.
Yeah, we did.
How'd it go, Sean?
Look, I'm still... the wound's fresh. we'll get to it later in the show in detail.
I bought in a Western Bulldogs official polo shirt this morning, in case Sean wanted to jump on the bandwagon. Mm. So we'll see if we can't convince him of that by the end of the show. So before we get right into the week of AFL, a little bit of shameless promotion. If you want to be involved in the show, there are so many ways you can do it. One, follow us on Facebook at www.facebook.com/the6points. That's with a number. Two, tweet us on the Twitter machine at 6 points podcast, again with a number. Three, email us at 6pointspodcast@gmail.com. That is with
the word.
S-I-X. Yeah, I was going to say the numbers, but no, the word.
No, the word. Spell out the numbers.
We still haven't got around to that, and I'll be honest, it's probably not going to happen until semester break or something. And of course, if you like the show, hit us up with a review on the iTunes store. Just search for 6 points, again with a number, and everything will come up from there. So on today's show, as always, we will go through all of the AFL's round 4 action, looking into next week's round 5. We'll have our hero, our villain, as well as our predictions for round 5. But first, as always, we start with our 3 feature games, and here to take us through the first, like we said, a man who almost didn't make it into the studio this morning, Sean Subra.
First clash of the Anzac weekend, and I was really looking forward to this game. In recent times, when someone says, hey, Friday night footy, Melbourne Richmond, I'm thinking, oh goodness, what
a
terrible game.
Well, and fair enough.
But in the context of the season, bring it on. Two teams battling it out on the Friday night stage. The D's have not played, listen in, Brianna. They haven't played Friday Night Lights since 2013. Friday night is the biggest time slot for ratings, and the AFL want good competitive games. And, well,
Melbourne hasn't really been in that category lately,
yes,
have they?
They haven't been anything. They've been everything but competitive in the last few years.
But it's turning around this year, yes, in all fairness to them.
Nathan Jones, great effort through heavy traffic, rushes a kick off the side of the boot into the forward 50 and finds the big boy, Jesse Hogan, who converted. First great start for Melbourne. Lively game, really good first quarter to watch. Both teams were very competitive. Bernie Vince, I had watching him last week, but loved his game early. Big influence on the field, tagging out Trent Cochin. He did a very good job on Trent. Just quickly talking about that that little strategy that Melbourne have got there. I quite like it. Bernie gets the main tagging role. Then when the big midfielder, Trent Cochin, this week, last week was Paddy Dangerfield, if they get moved into the forward line to have a bit of a rest, he doesn't follow them. He stays in the midfield, tags the second best midfielder. I like it, and it's working.
It seems to be working. Yeah, obviously they didn't get the W last week against the Crows, but for sure it seems to be, at the very least, ruffling a few feathers.
Yeah, definitely. Tell you what, through the end of this quarter, it was like the last minutes of a prelim. Crowd was involved. Pressure was immense. Great viewing. Demon's instructions were to clear the ball outside of 50. So every kick-in went deep into the ground. One of them almost passed centre circle. Things like that, just keep the game going. Rather than sort of kicking it in, locking it in the forward 50 for a little bit, just booting it down to the forward 50, just kept the game moving throughout the whole first quarter. Nathan Gordon, someone we don't talk about often, took a monster specky just before quarter time to bring the fairly even first term to a close. On to the second, you got a feeling early that the momentum was swinging Richmond's way, but they just couldn't capitalize yet on the scoreboard. Beautiful tap down from Jamer, spelt Jammer on my script, down to Dom Tyson, but couldn't get it on the right side of his boot. Kent had a superb chase and tackle just outside the forward 50, which unfortunately resulted him doing a hamstring. Real shame from him. He was having a really great aggressive game, and that was a play that really came out of nowhere. Richmond was kind of away with the ball, and Kent stood up, took the tackle on himself, got the tackle, unfortunately popped his hammy.
Yeah, and a few unfortunate injuries, you should say, for Richmond. And I know you'll get to the other one a little bit later on.
Yeah, very unfortunate, really unfortunate for Richmond. Yeah. Richmond inaccurate, a couple of posters, some easy mistakes and skill errors with no wind at all to affect anything. So it just came down to poor kicking. Garlett, amazing desperation in the forward 50, outnumbered by two much bigger bodies, didn't give up. He did whatever he could, really, fought, and he got the ball out to Vandenberg, who booted it through. Vandenberg, superb game. A 50-metre penalty to Jack Watts against Dusty Martin had the Melbourne faithful screaming, myself included. Have not seen that kind of roar from a Demons crowd in a long time.
And I know Brianna, last week she was very annoyed with you, but she's looking through the glass at the moment. She's got a huge smile on her face.
I've got a thumbs up from
Brie. She's in a much better mood this week as well.
Nathan Drummond, the first gamer for Richmond, landed terribly after a marking contest. Looked really bad for him. He was grabbing his knee in extraordinarily pain. Not saying you see often on the field, players in that much pain, so it's not a great thing to see.
It's almost, when they do things like that, quite often it's shock to start with, and then later on you get the results. But he was in pain from the second that happened.
He was stretched off with both teams using their sub within the first half. Really, really bad luck for him, and the news back from that one, he has done his knee and he will be out for the rest of the season. Rob, literally an hour after getting presented his first Richmond jumper.
There are some people that kick a goal with their first kick in footy, and then there are some people that rupture their knee. So
very sad.
Our thoughts go out to Nathan Drummond.
Mm. Yeah, definitely. Nathan Jones, the captain of the Dees, is one of the best things that has ever happened to Melbourne, I think. He tackled the ball out of play, gave away the free kick for a high tackle in the end, followed by a little scuff on the boundary. Now, although he gave away the free, he started some momentum and aggression for the Dees, which I think is what they need. If you give away a free here and there, they just still need that momentum. They need that aggression, because that's just what they haven't had in the recent times. As a captain, great work from Nathan Jones. Melbourne just finished on top alongside the six posters for the half. That's right, an unusually high six hit the posts in a half of footy. Third quarter, rain kicked in full bore at the halftime as goals became very hard to get. Slippery, wet, messy football. Slippery, wet and messy, Rob. A free kick to Melbourne resulted in a niggle in the forward 50 with a lot of heart. Rob, words were being spoken on the field and it was personal. Richmond having a hard time in front of goal. 5-13. Richmond were in the third quarter. 5-13. Melbourne in front by 2 goals midway through the third, despite only having 20 side inside 50s to Richmond 53. So Melbourne had 26 inside 50s to 53, and were still on top.
That's quite a ridiculous stat in the end, isn't it?
Looking too good for Richmond. good conversion rate from the Dees, but very low numbers. You'd expect a few more inside 50s from Melbourne. Melbourne broke away late in the fourth to go up by 4 goals, thanks to efforts from Garlett and Nathan Jones. Last quarter, both teams needed their respective captains to stand up in the midfield and win the game for them. Just like your hero last week, Rob, Mr. Joel Selwood. Melbourne were one down on rotations with Neville Jetta failing a concussion test at three-quarter time. Now, as good as these both teams were playing, they were still making those bottom eight mistakes, just sometimes not being able to work it out between each other. Now, that will soon iron out of the team, but at the moment it's still there and it will still be an issue when they play at the top eight clubs. Big Bruce, took over the commentary box and was throwing out all types of sports references. He compared a race to the ball by the two ruckmen to two horses at Flemington. So nice.
Yeah, galloping? I think that's the visual that I'm getting here. Yeah.
So great references there from Big Bruce. Revolt had a lot of the football during the game, but only 4 points to show for it. Melbourne kept winning the crucial contest and were a lot cleaner in the wet conditions. They just snapped a lot better than Richmond did when it started raining. Ripper from Bernard Vince with a monster kick going through to push the margin out to 25 points, and it was looking like the Tigers were dead. Melbourne fans, I'm going to say it again in full voice, loving every second of this game. Jesse Hogan, big mark, tight angle, 40 metres out, and he slotted it through like it was his 200th game. The confidence on that boy to have a ping from there is incredible.
It's amazing. He's got such composure and he's such a an influential figure in that forward line already. What is it, his third or fourth game. Of actual AFL? I know he's been obviously playing and he was obviously quite a young draft pick, but he's coming along very nicely.
Really nicely. Great game to watch. Huge win for Melbourne. Congratulations to Paul Roos for finally getting some success from the club. Final score, Richmond 6-15-51 to Melbourne's 12-11-83. Really great win for Melbourne.
Yeah, absolutely.
They were obviously the underdogs for this one. Richmond, I think it's just still too early to call for Richmond. I mean, we know they have their little lapses at the end of the season.
Yeah.
But they were on at the start, Richmond, and Melbourne did overcome and came from behind for a good victory.
I think at the end of the day, Melbourne just wanted that more, didn't they?
Oh, definitely.
And you saw, especially once the third quarter hit, the rain started pouring down. Richmond, there were contests. I think it was a Nathan Jones snap in the third quarter.
I think
it might have been. There was five or six Richmond players around that contest, all standing around, one of them on the ground, and then three Demons went into the ground, got the ball out, shoved it to Jones. And that's the reason. There was six players waiting for someone else to do the work for them for Richmond, and that's the ultimate reason why they lost this game and then got a huge spray from the in the media from Damien Hardwick, and rightfully so.
They didn't
put forward an effort that an AFL club should.
Yeah, without a doubt. So what can Melbourne do this year, Rob? What are they, like, not what are they going aiming for, but what can they do in the competition this year?
I think Melbourne's aim this year shouldn't necessarily be to win X amount of games. I think Melbourne's aim should be to be competitive. And I think through
get
four rounds
they've
done that. Okay, like, obviously they lost by, was it three, four, five goals last week?
Yeah.
Possibly something like that. But they were competitive, and we mentioned it on the show. Mm. We said, you know, we liked the way that they were going about it. So now they're actually playing an attractive brand of football, and you can see the effort and the energy there. And as a fan, that's all you want.
Oh, without a doubt.
I remember a prelim Bulldogs St Kilda. Bulldogs lost. Obviously, I was devastated, but I remember thinking to myself, not one player out there could have given more.
Yeah.
And that's all you can ask as a fan.
Oh, without a doubt.
Now, Melbourne, I think they're actually probably going to land somewhere in that 10 to 13 range this year, depending on their draw. I haven't looked at it in a lot of detail, but
That's still a big bump.
Oh, 100%. And they're definitely going to give a lot of teams in that 8 to 10 range runs. And I think that's where they have to put themselves against. They have to put themselves against teams like Richmond, and obviously maybe we have to reevaluate what Richmond's going to do this year.
That's my next question.
Maybe even the Gold Coast, they might give them a run for their money as
Oh, definitely.
So, look, well done to Richmond, and Paul Roos has got this club going along nicely. Look, they're not going to make the finals, but, you know, That'll be small steps.
Yeah, definitely. Let's talk about Richmond, the other team. What's the story for them? Are they going to have just another late-minute surge from to the finals?
I don't know. They just didn't care on Friday, did
really
they?
Didn't,
and,
did they?
Look, they're 2-2. And there's a lot of teams. Port Adelaide, I think, is 2-2. Hawthorn's 2-2. But let's be honest, Richmond's nowhere near the caliber of that. Now, the Bulldogs are obviously a surprise, but Richmond lost to the Bulldogs. I thought Richmond would win that. I tipped Richmond.
Yeah.
And obviously, they've gone down to Melbourne. So their two losses have come against mid-range kind of teams. I mean, obviously, there's now a bit of talk about the Bulldogs making finals, but I think we just need to reel that back in a bit until the Bulldogs play some harder opponents. But Damien Hardwick said it, they didn't care, they didn't put their head over the ball, they didn't play with any intensity, and they were beaten. Ultimately, Melbourne wanted this more, and I think until Richmond get that fight back, and maybe they will in the second half of the season, but they just didn't look like they cared on Friday.
Yeah, without a doubt. Now, this was obviously a massive win for Melbourne on the Friday night. They haven't played Friday night, as we mentioned before, in 2 years. Does this earn them any kind of regular spot on the Friday night stage?
I wouldn't say regular.
Two-year gap spot?
By any means, but I think in the next 2 years you'll see them play more, absolutely.
Cool.
And I know, obviously, the game was wet and it probably wasn't the greatest spectacle of AFL football, But there's also the story aspect, and especially between now and 2017, if Paul Rouge can get this club to the point where they're hovering around that eighth spot and ready for the finals, there'll be a lot of interest and a lot of buzz around Melbourne, and also for the feel-good story that they are. They're still a really young team. I think 14 of the players out there were drafted in the last 2 years, so that's Paul Rouge's direct influence. Maybe not regularly, but I think they'll definitely get one or two a year from here on out.
Last question for you, Rob. Jack Watts, midway through the second, we saw the best of him. Then we saw the worst of Jack in about 30 seconds. He kicked a sensational goal to lift the team, then dropped a crucial uncontested mark, which was then turned over for a Richmond goal. Will we ever get a reliable, talented Jack?
Oh, who knows?
It's a gamble, isn't it?
Yeah, I remember when he was taken, and he was taken ahead of Nat Nui, I think, in that draft. Watts went number one, Nat Nui went number two, of course, to the Eagles. And in that first season, everyone was hammering Jack Watts about it. And, Nick Nat was a better player and all that. Now, Nick Nat hasn't really developed all that much. He's still an amazing athlete, still very exciting, but he's definitely not.
He's got that spectacular aspect about him, yeah.
He's got the flair. But Jack Watts, and I was in Melbourne last year. I went over, I deliberately planned my trip to Melbourne when the Bulldogs were playing Melbourne because I thought that's a guaranteed win.
W.
And Jack Watts, and don't get me wrong, I think a lot of these were fluke more than skill, but he kicked 4 goals that night, I think. And look, big forwards take a long time to come along. I think he's been in the league maybe 5 or 6 years now. Yep. So in the next couple of years, I think he'll get a little bit more consistent. And the better a team Melbourne become, the more that's going to help him develop as a player, I think, as well.
Cool. I'm really liking Melbourne's game on Friday, Rob. I never thought I would ever say it, but they're playing football and they really have a talented side, and they're finally playing exciting ball.
And they're playing the right way as well.
Oh, definitely, without a doubt. Some goals to wrap up this one, some stats for you. Richmond Edwards finish up with 2, all the rest with 1. Melbourne Hogan with 2, Dawes with 2, Garlett with 2, Kennedy, Vanderberg, Watts and Brayshaw and Vince all with 1.
Hero of the Week. Yes, it is now time for Hero of the Week. Sean, take us through someone in the AFL family who shone brightly this week in your eyes. And if you want to, the Bulldogs, that's okay. I can help you. I can help you with some key stats from that game if you need to.
As tempting as the Bulldogs were for Hero this week. No, I've done some odd ones in the last couple of weeks. I've just gone a plain and simple one this week, Rob. My Hero of the Week is the GWS Giants. They've entered the season to play football and to play football well. Jeremy Cameron is a freak, and this GWS outfit is sensational. There was a lot of talk about the recruiting of the team when they first formed. Gold Coast, when they first came to the competition, they got that big player in Gary Ablett. But the Giants never really did have that one big recruit. They had that, you know, you got your Scullies, you've got your Phil Davises. They're all kind of middle to new kind of players. They never had that really big established player that they could get. And there probably wasn't that many people out there that were needed to be recruited at that time as well. So you can't really blame them. But there was a lot of media scrutiny for that. But it seemed to have worked. I mean, you look at Gold Coast this year, Gary Ablett's gone, and now seemingly Gold Coast is now gone as well.
More injuries to deal with this week as well. I think Swallow's out bit of time as well. So things definitely not looking good for the other expansion club, are they?
Yeah, definitely not. And GWS is relying on a team. They're not relying on a player, which I like. I was critical about the ideology behind it as well, but yeah, it seems to be working. Playing great, top of the ladder. Out of their next 5 games, they could, not easily, but they could definitely win 3 out of 5 if they could keep this form, potentially 4 out of 5. The fourth game is the Crows, so it depends how what mood they're in.
We'll see what the Crows actually turn up in the next month, yeah.
But out of the top 5, the only team that I've pretty much ridden off is Hawthorn, and that's because they're Hawthorn. But I can't see them moving out of the top 8 just yet. I just think a mere 1 year ago, they were that 4-point team that sides used to call them, because they'd just go to Western Sydney, collect the 4 points, and then come home. Now they're favourites in a lot of games. So congratulations to the Giants. All the best to you guys for this round, and you guys are my Hero of the Week. Well done.
Absolutely. I mean, a great call as well. And we'll get to, when we do Villain a little later on the show, I've got some news on the other expansion club as well.
Okay, good.
But Sean, no surprises here. My hero this week has to be Bulldog Jakey Stringer. A scintillating performance, including 6 goals. against the once mighty Crows on Sunday.
All right. You slipped that in there.
Exactly. Stringer finished, of course, with the 6 goals for the Dogs. But even more important than that, he took 3 marks inside 50. And that's a stat that the Dogs really do struggle in. On top of that, more than half of his 15 touches were contested possessions, and he kicked for goal at 75%. So he got 6 out of the 8 goals that he attempted, which is a great effort. Now, he should have had 8.
Yeah, it's a nice way to put it, Rob, because the 2 were very easy goals.
Very easy goals that he missed. But look, the Bulldogs have needed avenues to goal for so many years now, and it seems as though he's coming of age and that forward line is taking shape. He turned 21 on Saturday, so happy birthday for Saturday, Jake Stringer. And hopefully we can see more of these types of performances from you, especially against Sean's boys, the Crows. So Jake Stringer, that is why you are my hero of the week.
Yeah, well, not a good call for you of the week, Rob. But we need to move on. I can't dwell on it too much. We're going to move on to our second featured game now, which was, of course, the Port Adelaide Football Club versus Sydney. Rob, take it away.
My apologies to Sean.
I
didn't proofread the script this week.
You've confused me.
So it was, of course, Fremantle.
Fremantle
and Sydney at Domain Stadium on Saturday night. That's my mistake. We were originally going to do the Port Adelaide Hawthorn game, but the Sydney Freo game turned out to be just about as interesting.
Exciting.
We'll go with that. So two unbeaten teams going head-to-head on Anzac Day, Sean.
Bang.
After a scrappy start, Pavlich kicked truly from outside 50 to put the first on the board for Freo, and I didn't think he could get the distance, but Pav just denying age. there's a saying in the NBA, which is father time is undefeated, meaning when a player gets old, it always catches up to them. Ignore that. Pav's beaten father time.
Well, what's his face? Dustin Fletcher.
Yeah, Dustin Fletcher.
Another father time there.
I think if Dustin Fletcher's kids could be coming in before he retires. Only minutes later, a silly push after the fact by Jared McVay saw Clancy Pierce given 50 metres and converting Frio's second goal, and Subin converting nearly instantly after the reset, to give Fremantle a 3-goal advantage in a very short amount of time.
Fast starters, loving that fast start from Fremantle.
Exactly.
That is working so well for them.
And there was a lot of fast starts on the weekend as well.
Yeah.
Obviously, Port Adelaide got the jump on Hawthorn, and I will get to your boys a little later on. Frio's pressure seemed to be getting to the Swans, Sean. They didn't seem to have a lot of patience when heading inside 50. And the one time they did in the first quarter, they worked the ball around the 50-minute arc, affecting the switch, maintaining possession. When they did go inside 50, Fremantle got a free kick, and less than 30 seconds later, the ball was at the half-forward line for Fremantle. At the end of the quarter, Bird was moved on to Fife to try and quell his impact around the stoppages. Now, Fife, we all know how great a player he is. The very next stoppage, Bird was nowhere near Fife as he streamed through the contest and narrowly missed the Sanderlands hit-out. Now, Sydney needed to change that if they wanted to compete for the rest of the game, so Freo leading by 19 points at the first change. Freo continued on their merry way in the second, kicking the first 2 goals of the term, the second of which was a direct result of pressure inside 50 as Rampy put the ball out in the full and the kick-in resulted in a Zach Clark mark and goal. Now, Bird didn't seem to have made the necessary corrections on Fife as he had an open run to be the third man up in a contest at half forward just 5 minutes into the quarter. So just uncharacteristic of Sydney not to do the little 1%.
Not to shut him down, yeah.
2 more quick goals to Freo, including another bomb from outside 50 by the Pav.
Saw
the lead balloon out to 43 points, and Sydney just couldn't get their hands on the ball. The Swans looked slow and heavy. Freo looked energetic and excited for the contest. There were periods of 5 minutes here and there where the Swans would hold Fremantle at bay, Sean, but in the end, Freo would always break the deadlock. By halftime, the margin was out to 48 points. Swans only amassing 1 goal and a half of footy. They were in the grand final last year, and that says something about Freo.
Yeah.
If they can hold a team to that and a half. So Sydney's lowest halftime score since 1997, Sean.
Boom. 97.
97. Were you alive? Yeah,
I was alive.
Yeah,
alive.
My cousins weren't alive. And it was really shades of the 2013 prelim between the two teams at then obviously called Paterson Stadium. But Fremantle's pressure in that first half was amazing, and Sydney just didn't seem to be able to cope with it. Into the third quarter. Now, Sydney had the better of the 5 minutes to start the third, but silly decisions like kicking it to the biggest man on the planet, Sanderlands, resulted in the Swans squandering their opportunities and only resulted in 2 points. Sydney did manage to kick their second goal of the game and cut to the coach's box. Ross Lyon is spewing. He's dropping his pen in frustration. It says something about the Dockers' mindset this year, Sean. The intensity rose the longer the quarter went, and as Sydney started to win their fair share of the ball, and they kicked the first two goals of the quarter, a dubious free kick, I thought, against Fife in the defensive 50, and the Swans had 3 unanswered to start the third, and they had taken the momentum back at this point. Sydney, for me, they were robbed of a goal late, in the quarter, when a score review proved inconclusive, and Clancy Pierce was deemed to have touched the ball on the line. Really lucky for Fremantle, it appeared to my eye that poor old Clancy Pierce had just dived over the ball, or the bounce hadn't come as high as he thought it would. But nevertheless, we won't get into the score review controversy. Three-quarter time rolled around, and the margin had been cut to just 20 points from 9 scoring shots in the quarter for the Swans. It looked like the fourth quarter could prove interesting after it seemed that Fremantle were running away with the game in the first half, and I almost didn't even tune in for the second half of this one, but I'm glad I did. Fourth quarter, the Swans picked up where they left off with sub Gary Rowan running into an open goal after a contest by Tippett to cut the margin to under 3 goals. Tippett then kicked the next, and the margin all of a sudden was just 8 points. So you'd gone from 8 goals down at the half to just 8 points into the in the fourth quarter. 12 minutes to go, Lloyd, this is from Sydney, sorry, broke from halfback and delivered it to a teammate. That teammate kicked to Buddy. Buddy then kicked to Lloyd, who had run on inside 50. He marks and goals. The margin's cut to 3 points. It's acts like that that saw Sydney mount this amazing comeback, Sean.
Definitely.
10 minutes to go, and the Pav
the marks, big Pav.
And goals after a clever kick by Mzungu and restores the margin to 10 points. Now, the Pav delivers in the big moments. And yeah, that is why he's been such a great captain for Fremantle for so long.
The big 29.
Score review with 5 minutes to go over whether or not the ball hit the post before Tippett picked it up in goal. Now, the decision was a behind. They adjudicated that it did, in fact, hit the post. But I think it was off McFarlane's leg and not the post. So, nonetheless, yeah, we move on. But a couple of dubious score reviews there. A minute and a half to go, Sydney tried to mount one last attack off halfback. The ball is centred and Garrick Ibbotson spoils the ball. It tracks inside 50 and Main runs onto it and goals. This sealed the game for Freo. And after a game that I thought was boring at halftime, it turned into a real ripper. Final score, Fremantle 11-8, 74, Sydney 8-12, 60. Now, Sean, couple of notes from this game. People really seem to hate Buddy Franklin. And when I say hate, I mean they hate him. It doesn't seem to matter which team is playing. The crowd just loves giving him heaps. Compare that to other elite players such as your Ablets and your Fifes, and they seem to be loved everywhere. Why is that? And is there a stigma around him leaving the Hawks?
No, not a stigma. I mean, when he plays Crows, I hate him as well. Like,
I hate him when he plays the Bulldogs as well. But why is that?
It's because he... He has a seemingly dirty, it's probably bad word to say, dirty style of playing. He's very rough, which a lot of people see as should be a free kick in their sort of term.
But he does give away some of the most free kicks.
He does give away a lot. But just the way he kind of does don't argues and the way he goes about the ball, it's seemingly a dirty style, and he gets away with it as well. He usually gets out there and there's missed tackles. It's so hard to bring him down. He's such a big body. So hard to bring him down, and I think that's just what annoys people. I don't think there's a hatred. I just think he just really annoys people because he's got that persona of that he's the really good one that everyone doesn't like, but he is really, really good, and he keeps getting better, and yeah, he just keeps annoying the opposition.
So people hate him because he's too good.
Kind of like similar to Ballantyne from Fremantle.
Yeah, no,
everyone hates him because he's good, because he gets under the skin. You know, he just irritates
you. He delivers every week, doesn't he?
And he delivers, yeah.
I think that's a great comparison, Sean. Now, Freo have had 2 second-half fade-outs in a row. So, of course, 9 of the last 10 goals in the derby were by the Eagles, and they were comprehensively beaten by Sydney in the second half. How do they fix that?
It's an interesting one, and I was actually going to ask you this question. Is it the way to win now? Port Adelaide obviously just won against Hawthorn. They played really well in the first half. Then they had no legs in the second half. Fremantle probably did the same thing. Is this how you win games now? Is this the new style of how you go about it?
I hope not. But don't get me wrong, it's very interesting and it's a great spectacle. But I think part of it must just be when you're up 10 goals, you tend to lay off a bit, and you're not going to go for those contests. You won't put your head over the ball. And why would you? Yeah. I mean, you're 10 goals up.
It's an odd one. I mean, yeah, it might be a great tactic, but you should probably have some legs left in the end.
I think it's more of an effort thing. And I remember when I was playing junior football, all of my coaches, if we were getting flogged at halftime or something, they'd turn to us and say, anything a team does to you in a half, you can do to them in the second half. And I thought, oh, yeah, good joke. Like, we're never going to win this. And this week we saw two almost comebacks. I mean, a couple of score reviews go the other way. Sydney probably takes this one. 5 more minutes, maybe Hawthorn take the Port Adelaide game as well. So,
I mean, just with that Port Adelaide game, Hawthorn was just running in between Port Adelaide players. They had nothing left in the tank.
It was a complete reversal. In the first half, Hawthorn couldn't get their hands on the ball. And in the second half, Port Adelaide didn't go near it. Mm. So, I don't know if it's a fitness thing or if it's an effort thing, but either way, it's something that they do need to address. Now, Sean, both teams played in patches in this game, so it may be hard to tell, but who will finish higher on the ladder come season's end? I know when we did our predictions pre-season, we both had Sydney finishing higher than Fremantle, mm-hmm. but Fremantle are now the only undefeated team in the league.
Look, Fremantle they've turned a new leaf for me. I haven't seen them play football like this, I don't think, ever. I'm very impressed by Fremantle football. I think they're going to stay top of the ladder for a long time.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, they've surprised me. We all thought they were going to be good. Mm. But what they've done is they've managed to maintain the defensive pressure around the ground and score a little bit more. And I know they only picked up 74 points in this game, but I think they're actually averaging over 80 for the season. So great work for them. And
Fife and Mundy are just cleaning up.
Oh, they're ridiculous, aren't they? It makes me upset. I'm waiting for Bontempelli to turn into Matt Fife. So a couple of goals for this one. Multiples, you had Pavlich with 3, Main with 2 for the Dockers, and the Swans, you had Franklin and Tippett booting 2 each. Best on ground, Fife, obviously. I think he's probably got 12 Brownlow votes already this year after 4 rounds. I thought McFarlane did a really, really good job on Franklin as well. And for Sydney, Franklin, having said that, still, you know, leading goal kicker. And Rowan, I thought, actually was one of the few times we've seen a sub come in and have a really great impact on the game after spending the first half on the pine.
Villain of the week.
Villain of the week.
We've gone through two games from the weekend. We've done our hero of the week. Now it's time for us to flip the tables like an angry Brianna after a Melbourne loss. Sean, who or what got on your nerves this week?
My villain of the week, Rob, is an odd one, as they usually are.
They usually are.
And I'm speaking as a fan of football more than an unbiased broadcaster here, but please bear with me. Now, you know I'm originally from Adelaide, and yes, I love Adelaide footy. Now, I live in Perth, and I love WA footy as well. What I don't love, Rob, is the unfair reportage that non-Melbourne clubs get when it comes to football. Yes, Melbourne has an amazing footy culture and has the most clubs, but there are other clubs too. And I know it's not all the teams. Clubs like Dogs and the Demons usually get completely overlooked. Saturday night, Port Adelaide had an incredible first quarter against the Premiership side, as we just discussed before. Now, I haven't seen Port play like that ever, nor have I seen a first quarter that exciting in a long time. Instead of acknowledging how good Port was playing and discussing stats and all that kind of thing from Port's domination, the commentary team proceeded to discuss how strong Hawthorn was and how they will definitely come back. They started talking about how strong they were last week, and how good they were to have filled the buddy hole with new goal kickers. Now, in case you didn't notice, commentary team, the Wonder Club you're all sucking up to just conceded 8 goals. But still, Port doesn't get any kind of mention. Now, this isn't the first time this has happened. If it was just a one-off thing, I would have let it go. This is an ongoing thing. Last year, I almost had it as my villain. It was Crows v North down in Tasmania. Now, Crows are getting pumped by a finals destined North, which is clearly becoming a trend for the Crows. Now, instead of talking about North's good form and the Crows' bad form, the commentary team compared North's style of playing to Geelong, then went on to talk about Geelong's recent history and how good they are. We don't care! The viewers of the game, the people that watched that game were Crows fans, North fans, and Tasmanians, because it was in Tasmania, with only one thing in common. We don't like Geelong, and we couldn't care less about how successful they've been in recent times. Rob! It was so boring. For us as the viewer, with boring facts about recently successful teams of the competition of the AFL commentary team, just clean it up. Talk about the teams in question. Talk about relevant facts. Talk about the teams that are playing well, not the team that conceded 8 goals and how good they were last week. AFL commentary team, you are my villain of the week.
I wish you could turn around and have a look through the glass. Brianna is in tears. That was quite an emotional outpouring.
Yeah, it was close to the heart.
You feel better? You feel better?
Yeah,
now?
I do. It's off the chest.
That's good.
I've ripped my jacket off just before, villain. If you didn't say
now
that.
I know why. But look, I think it is something that frustrates a few people. Yeah. Put it this way, I'm a Bulldog supporter. For a long time, my team has been overlooked.
Yeah.
I'm well aware of how this goes. Mm. You know, the Bulldogs will start playing, you know, Essendon or let's say the Crows, you know, another non-finals bound team at the end of last year. And at the end of the day, you know, the week before the finals, they start talking about their premiership fancies. And it's completely irrelevant to the fact that I'm there as a Bulldog supporter, crying my eyes out.
Ripping up your polo.
Yeah, exactly. But, however, good pick, Sean. Now, my villain of the week for round 4 is the Gold Coast Football Club. You saw this one coming.
Mm-hmm.
I know Gaz is out, Sean, but going down to the other expansion club, GWS, by 66 points on the weekend is such a disappointment. As a team, the Gold Coast could only win one key stat, and that was tackles. And that was only because they never had the ball.
Have the ball.
And that is proven by the Giants having 158 more disposals
Goodness
than the Suns.
Me. 158?
158
wow.
more. Let's tell you this. Luke Hodge tore apart the Bulldogs last week. He had, 40 touches or something?
Yeah.
4 Luke Hodges. That's the difference in this
Goodness.
Game. That's ridiculous. Now, of the 65 tackles the Suns had, 15 of them came from Michael Riccitelli and David Swallow. The Suns have come under criticism for relying on too few to do too much, and even with Gaz out, it's the same story.
Yeah.
Gold Coast winless after 4 rounds. Unless the entire team lifts, it'll be their most disappointing season yet, and I'm calling that now. Their first season will be more of a success than this season unless they change. Don't blame Rodney Eade, because he has proven himself to be a good coach. He took the Dogs to 3 consecutive prelims in the past. Look, the blame belongs on the players, not the coach, and that is why Gold Coast are my villain of the week, Sean.
Good.
Good
villain.
You agree
with
that?
I'm happy with the villain, yeah. I mean, David Swallow had, 15 tackles? And half
Riccitelli
of 15 tackles.
And Swallow
and he's gone.
Yeah. So all of a sudden, look, it's not looking too great for them. Look, 2 games, hero villain down, 1 more game to go, and that is the big one.
Oh,
the Bulldogs. Woof, woof. And the Adelaide Crows, who couldn't even muster a whimper on Saturday afternoon. Bragging rights until the next time the two apparent powerhouses meet, Sean. I wanted this to be my game to review this week, but given the result, I'm glad you had to report this one, because I can't wait to see you squirm. So run us through how this one played out for you.
Yeah, no, good game to the Bulldogs. Congratulations to your boys.
Thank you. Humble in victory. Gracious in defeat, yeah.
Look, it was a good start to the Bulldogs with a quick 2 goals early. One from the ruckman in Cordy, who there was a lot of talk about him, how he would just be sort of out-armed by Sauce Jacobs, experienced Sauce Jacobs.
He was.
He was. But to get that first goal in the game, when you had all this talk about you're going to be out-manned, that's really good effort
huge confidence boost, yeah.
Adelaide took a bit to settle. By a bit, I mean 3 hours. Before a free kick to danger got Adelaide's first. Crows were smashing hit-outs with the experienced Sauce smashing Cordy. But that was about all they were winning. Bulldogs were on top in every other aspect of the game, including the scoreboard. They are the two best tackling teams in the comp, but at the moment only the Bulldogs were showing it. And it looked like a lot of games from Fremantle and Port Adelaide, which we just discussed on Saturday night, looked a lot like those two games. Stringer and Bob Murphy led the ferocious Bulldogs into the break, 41 points up. In a quarter to a stunned Crows sides. In the second quarter, Adelaide under the pump again from immense pressure of the Bulldogs, and they weren't coping well, kicking silly nothing balls, turning it over time and time again. Defensive structure from the Dogs really stood up. because Adelaide was in repair mode, attacking, trying to get this lead back, but the Dogs' defence was holding strong. There's a section in the second quarter, which I know you'll be very, very happy about. Adelaide was, after they got initially pumped on the start of this quarter, they sort of tried to turn things around. Balls coming inside 50 every minute, every 30 seconds. There was just balls coming inside 50. Then there were scraps inside 50. And Bulldogs are holding up fine. They were under the pump, yes, as any team would be, but they were getting it out and sort of moving the ball along. Kicking efficiency was horrific from Adelaide with 32% kicks efficient in the second. 32%!
1 in 3. And that's...
Wow!
And the biggest problem is that you can have an inefficient kick in terms of this stat. When you kick two or one on one and it goes the Bulldogs' way. But what was happening was they were kicking and it wasn't hitting a target and the Bulldogs were cutting. Bulldog. There was no contest. Mm. I loved it. There was nothing else to say. I loved it, Sean.
Yeah, Adelaide couldn't hit a target and it was all coming down to the Bulldogs' pressure and zone. Adelaide gained some momentum back, running the ball inside bit more often, but they still couldn't hit anything on the scoreboard. Dogs went inside 50 five times for 3 goals straight, while Adelaide went inside 50 5 times, 1 goal 1. So Bulldogs 5 times, 3 goals straight.
A little bit, and that comes down to that kicking efficiency, doesn't it, in the
Adelaide
end.
1 goal 1. 5 times, so not
I was upset
good.
That we let you score, to be honest.
Yeah, it is like that. When your team's that much ahead, when the other team scores, you're really upset when they get one goal on the board. A couple of misses late in the second saw a turnaround by Adelaide, kicking 2 goals to bring the margin into 33 points going into the long break. Probably the only negative thing from the Bulldogs' point of view. They missed a couple, and then Adelaide bounced back and then got a couple back.
I thought for the last sort of 5 to 8 minutes of that second quarter, the Bulldogs really had the run of play, and they didn't capitalise, and then within 2 minutes, the Crows got those last two, yeah.
Not taking anything away from the Bulldogs because they played sensationally, but there was something wrong with this Adelaide side. Not the normal smooth footy we have seen in the first 3 rounds. Third quarter, a touch ball cost the Crows a goal early as the lead went out to 60 points in 8 minutes of football. So that's 6 goals in 8 minutes. Rob Murphy was on fire, running it through the midfield with ease with 16 handball receives. Talia was finally moved to Jake Stringer, which was way overdue, who was battling out with Kyle Hardigan. But it didn't matter as Stringer got one behind the back of play and ran into an open goal. As big as it was, it should have been a lot bigger with the Dogs missing some very, very easy ones. Now, Tex loved his game first couple of games. It was a bit flat round 3. He had 2 kicks from the centre, which he could have used to set up to the players inside 50. First one hit the ground between 3 Dogs. Hit the ground between 3 Dogs. The second one hit a Bulldog player lace out on his chest. Like, it couldn't have been an easier kick for the Bulldogs player. Now, the whole team, Rory Laird copped a big hit from Cordy in the defensive 50 play, but I just think that Tex should have used those 2 kicks. Those 2 kicks could have been 2 goals. They could have been pumped inside 50, find a target. Even if it didn't find a target, Eddie Betts probably would have got a scrap and had at least a ping at goal. Just not good enough from Tex. As a captain, really need to stand up in those kind of scenarios. The play was held up due to an injured player on the field. He wasn't that bad. It was Rory Laird that was injured. No stretch. He just kind of just took a bit to get off.
A bit to get up, yep.
So they stopped the play. Rory Laird walked off. Then the play came back on. Now, the Dogs kicked the ball towards a forward 50. Now, the first kick that came in was an outnumbered contest from the Crows, 2 Crows to 4 Bulldogs. How can this happen, Rob? 2 Crows and 4 Bulldogs after the play's been stopped for about 3 minutes. You would have had to have rezoned up and re-got your man, found your man. And there was the first kick that came back after the play had stopped. It would have had to have been an even contest.
It was very bizarre because, as you mentioned, he wasn't stretched off. So I think what happened was everyone thought the stretcher was coming out. They'd obviously met in the middle of the grounds, had their little huddle or their powwow. Who knows what was said in the Adelaide powwow. I mean, but then they went back to
just thinking about dinner Saturday night.
Yeah,
it would have been.
Can't wait to get back to the
hotel. What are you doing for dinner?
Can't wait to get back to the hotel. Oi, Tex, is your missus in town?
Bring the mullet back, Tex, sorry.
Do you have that bottle of Bogan? Do you have the bottle of Bogan wine? It was a little bit disturbing. Mm.
The game was officially over at the end of the third. Crows really couldn't get any worse as the Dogs went up 75 points. Fourth quarter, Crows got some good plays together. Now, personally, at this stage, I was at Woolworths.
Buying tissues, I assume.
So came back, just saw the last half of this one. But yeah, it was too late. The Sting was well and truly out of the game. Eddie Betts kicked 3 goals in the fourth, but that still wasn't enough. Bulldogs pressure again, just too good for Adelaide. Now, last year, the issue for the Crows was that the perceived pressure caused turnovers in the centre, which resulted in goals. This is exactly what happened on Sunday. They panicked, made bad decisions and turned the ball over when probably there wasn't any pressure there, but the perceived pressure that they thought was there really just stressed them and they were just kicking nothing balls. Western Bulldogs brought the game home by 57 points to put the Crows away easily in front of a very loud crowd who hasn't seen this kind of football in a few years. Some happy Bulldogs around Melbourne this weekend. Final score, Western Bulldogs 18-17-125 to Adelaide 10-8-68. Now, Rob, is a telling game for both clubs. Where do they both stand in the context of the year? Let's start with the Bulldogs. Were they that good or was Adelaide that bad?
Combination. Mm. I'd love to say that the Bulldogs just dominated, but the Bulldogs did dominate, but I think it was it's very hard to tell when a game like this happens because the Bulldogs were putting on a mench presser around the ground and that was forcing the Crows into mistakes. Now, if it was the Bulldogs being that good, the Crows, when they got the ball, would have made use of it. But the Crows, even when they got the ball, couldn't make use of it. So it was a combination of the Crows being that bad, the Bulldogs being that good. In terms of the season, I might have to reevaluate. I think you had the Bulldogs at 14. I had them at 10 or something in the season.
Yeah, I'm going to have to bump them up a bit.
With Gold Coast having a really mediocre season and a lot of teams.
Brisbane.
Yeah, and Brisbane as well. I mean, I don't want to get too excited, but I think the Bulldogs might be scrapping for that 8th place. And again, look, we've only had one test. That was Hawthorn, and we got absolutely destroyed last week. We've got Sydney coming up this week. That'll be another good test.
But you still were in Hawthorn for about half of the game.
For half of the game, we were in it. And we also didn't have... look, Bontempelli's great. He's not going to be like a huge impact player. But there's a few people out. And then, look, we've got Sydney this week. We'll see how the dimensions of the SCG go. I think it'll favour... well, it'll work for the Bulldogs game, but having said that, Sydney coming off that loss, I think Sydney will want revenge. And also, it'll test our back line with the two tools.
Without a doubt.
Roughhead, I expect to go to Buddy and Talia to Tippett. But look, it's interesting. I don't want to get too excited. I mean, obviously, I'm giving you a lot of crap, and rightfully so, because you told me that there was not a hope in hell the Bulldogs would win.
You did say that, yep.
And look, Adelaide were the favourites for this one, and rightfully so. Up until Sunday, they looked nearly invincible. But, I mean, don't read too much into it, but I think both of these teams, ironically enough, 3-1 at this point, are actually both around that 8-10 stage. I don't think they've had particularly hard schedules at this point.
Yeah, without a doubt. The only issue I can see for the Bulldogs in the future is the accuracy. They really wasted it in front of goal. 17 points is quite high. And although on Sunday it didn't matter because they won by a lot, it's probably going to be a problem in the future. What are your thoughts?
Yeah. Obviously, I'd like them to kick a little bit better. If you have 35 scoring shots, I'd like the result to be something closer to 25-10. You know, somewhere around there. But ultimately, and look, there were some easy goals that were missed. Jared Gant missed one, Jake Stringer missed two, a couple of other ones where I think people had a little bit more time than they thought. But at the end of the day, the pressure in that forward line is what's creating these opportunities. So yeah, they're missing them. But even if they're missing them, as the example was, you lock it in and then they can't get it out. So a lot of these points came consecutively. I know Stringer kicked two in a row. Grant's, I think, was on the back of somebody else's as well. So you're getting 4 points, but you're getting 4 points instead of nothing. So it's an interesting thing. I mean, look, 18 goals in a game is great. Like I said, I prefer them to have 25-10 in this case. And I think 14 of the players have played less than under 25. I think that might be the stat. Bulldogs are a very, very,
very
young team. We obviously lost a lot of experience at the end of last year. And as they get older... and the composure comes back, I think they'll get it. And if Jake Stringer can ever kick straight from a set shot, we'll be right.
Yeah, definitely. Big spread of goal kickers, which I think was a big positive for Bulldogs on Sunday. Now, let's talk about Tex. I'm not having a go. I'm not just jumping off the Tex bandwagon because he had a bad game. He's had the last two games, he's been a bit poor. But it's these bad games when the captain of your team has to stand up and has to lead the team in the right direction. I personally think Tex didn't do enough as captain. On Sunday, as we talked about before the show, Phil Walsh was having a chat with Tex on three-quarter time, just before three-quarter time, I believe. And Tex looked like he wasn't interested. It looked like he was getting a lecture from a teacher, and he just was not paying attention. Not a good sight, not a good vision for the Adelaide Footy Club.
No, it's not good vision, but... And I'd mentioned this at the before the show, and I'll mention it again. Key forwards are great. You look at examples, Carey, Hawkins, Roughhead, Buddy, all great players, but when the ball's not getting to the forward line, they have trouble impacting the game.
Mm.
And the ball was not getting into the forward line.
And He needs to push up to that half forward.
Agree that he should have pushed up. I will agree with that. But the other thing is that Adelaide had such trouble getting it out of the Bulldog zone when they lock it inside 50. Look, should he have done more? Yeah, maybe, you know, even if it's crashing packs, he should have done something to make his presence felt. As for that vision, I mean, I think it might have been before halftime, and okay, like maybe they could have had a comeback. But if they start talking at three-quarter time and you're 11, 12 goals down, like you are just thinking about dinner that night, aren't you? You're not, you know, you just want to get off the ground, have a shower and get home. But yeah. I think he's still the right choice. I see the next point in the rundown. I think he's the right choice still, but I think he'll learn from this, or at least he should learn from this, that he needs to impact the game a little bit more.
Yeah, definitely. Some goals to finish up this one. Stringer, your boy, finished with 6. Boyd and Jong finished with 2. Betts from Adelaide finished with 4, and Danger finished with 2. Best on ground for me. Stringer and Murphy were sensational. Some talent I have never personally seen from a Dog's outfit. The only player from Crows that probably deserves a mention are Scott Thompson. He had only a really small mention, though, at that. He finished up with 38, but had 38 touches, but had no impact on the game. So 38 touches was a good effort, but no impact.
Yep. Dream team time, Sean.
Bang. Loading it up now, Rob.
Yeah, I'm going to get the tissues out because what you felt on Sunday night was what I felt on Monday morning when I looked at my dream team. We are running a little bit over time, so just take us through very quickly how you did, changes, what you're going to do.
Yeah, not bad. Finished 1894, so big drop. The thing that I was very disappointed with last week was that I dropped 11,000 spots from last week from my position of 2,000 last round. Really good players. There wasn't anyone outstanding, to be honest. Probably Sauce Jacobs finished with 117. He did pretty well. All the Essendon players did pretty well. Hibbert, 104. Goddard, 113. Tony Bell Chambers, 84. Robbie Gray didn't play, which was a big...
Screwed my forward line.
Yeah, a big hole. And he was a late omission as well. So
yeah, I'd already done all my changes. Obviously, Wine's getting injured the week before.
And the big drop for this week was the number one last week, which was Lachie Neale, had 162 last week, and he finished with 36 this week.
You don't need to tell me, Sean. He's sitting in my midfield with a big black hole to him.
That's a drop of over 100.
It's ridiculous, isn't
that's
it?
That's massive.
And against the team, Sydney's good. Let's not make anything about that. But Fremantle dominated that first half. You'd think that he would have been able to get in on the action, but... Yeah, didn't do it. Changes. What are you looking for this week?
It's a tough one. I mean, I'm quite happy with the team. It's just they can't get a consistent week together. I mean, last week was pretty good. Vanderberg's definitely coming into the team. He's outdone Newton the past couple of weeks, so Newton will go to the bench. Obviously, both from Melbourne. Michael Taylor, sensational, 101 from the Bulldogs.
He's really chopping, and that's 101, and Adelaide barely touched the ball.
Yeah, so he's really doing well. Adam Oxley, he's low from Collingwood, he's only 36. I'll probably bring Alapate Carlisle, Bobby Carlisle as BT calls him, on to the field, get Oxley off for the bench for this round. But yeah, not too upset with the team.
Not too bad. I've already done my trades. That's how bad my team was.
You know it's bad when you do them the first half of the week.
It was so atrocious. So a couple of things that screwed me, obviously, Robbie Gray not playing. Wasn't super bad. I had Tom Boyd in the bench. He picked up 59, so he slots right in there. But Billy Longer from St Kilda, I decided, look, I need an extra ruckman. Ryder had a couple of average weeks. So I brought in Billy Longer, Nick Natanui and Patrick Ryder got 79 and 83, respectively. Billy Longer got 128.
What did Patty get? 83.
Patty Ryder, 83, yep. Mm. And then Billy Longer, 128, sitting on my bench. Does nothing for me.
Yeah.
Look, Lumumba had a pretty average game. Neil, as you mentioned, was shocking. Adam Oxley got 36. Camden McIntosh, after a fiery start to the season, 47. And again, Daniel Talia, you'd think with the Bulldogs being inside 50 so much, he would have scored, but only got 48. So my team's a bit rough. But hopefully that can change this week. So I bought in Dane Swan into my forward line. Decided to use that $400,000.
So you laughed at me at the start of this. Yep. For putting Dane Swan as a forward, and here he is.
Well, I've got to take advantage of it. And then I've also bought in Jasper Pittard from Port into my defence, and hopefully that can shore it up. But
Jasper Pittard, as a family of a Port supporter, he makes you so nervous. He holds the ball just that second too long, and he looks like he's going to get done.
He does, but he scores pretty well. He's averaging 88. So, look, I don't know what I'm going to do next week. My team's not looking through crash hold, if I'm being 100% honest. All right, from Dream Team into something I know a little bit more about, predictions. Now, last week screwed me. Absolutely. I had so many wrong games.
Yeah.
But, Sean, we'll go through this week's games nonetheless. We'll see what we can crack up. So, take us through. Friday night will be Carlton.
Carlton-Coma. Big rivalry, this one. Carlton got the win last week, but Collingwood is turning a new leaf for me as well. They're playing, I didn't think they'd be competitive, but they're playing pretty good footy, so Collingwood for me.
I think got to go Collingwood. Obviously, we both had Essendon last week for the Anzac Day clash, yep, and they let us down. Collingwood, I don't know if they're impressing me, but they're winning games, so
yeah,
I'll go Collingwood for that one as well.
Yeah, Richmond Geelong at the MCG. I'm going to go Richmond here. Geelong, very, very flat. Three losses, one win.
Yeah, I'm going to go Geelong. No, the team's impressing me a lot at the moment.
Oh, definitely not.
Richmond's definitely not impressing me, and especially after losing to Melbourne.
Oh, that's true.
Geelong at least put up a pretty solid fight against North Melbourne. Mm. I think it was only 14 points in the end or something. Geelong. I think Geelong's too proud as well. Richmond doesn't really have anything to be. Well, they have a club, but you know what I'm saying. Richmond doesn't look to be putting the effort. At least Geelong put in the effort last week.
Yeah, without a doubt. Sydney at the SCG now. Take on your boys, the Dogs.
Yeah.
Very impressive last week, but Sydney will want to bounce back from the loss to Fremantle.
Yeah, I'm torn on this because I think the SCG will actually favour the way the Bulldogs play. And look, if there's some wet weather footy, we've got a lot of mid-sized people and hard nuts. I think they could really work, but having said that, I think you've got to go Sydney. And if the Bulldogs win, then I will tip the Bulldogs for the rest of the year. Because I tip Richmond and the Bulldogs beat them. But if the Bulldogs beat Sydney, I'll tip the Bulldogs for the rest of the year.
All right. He's gone all out.
Called it.
Okay, probably the most terrible game of the season so far. The Gold Coast Suns take on Brisbane at Metricon Stadium. Couldn't think of a worse game to watch.
Yeah, honestly, the only good thing about this game is that one of these teams is going to get on the board, isn't it? It's the ultimate.
It's pretty much which team's better on the day.
I'm going to back Brisbane.
Brisbane? I bet Brisbane last week against West Coast. Oh!
Yeah, but and the West Coast beat up against bad teams. We know that, Sean.
Yeah, oh. Who? I'll go Brisbane as well. North Melbourne take on Hawthorn at Etihad. Hawks too strong. Both good teams, but Hawks too strong.
You say that, but North was the only team that Hawthorn didn't beat last year.
Fair.
And it's at Etihad Stadium.
Hawks lost last week, though, and they want to bounce back.
That's true. But North hasn't had a fantastic start to the season either.
You saw Alistair Clarkson, the kind of punch he was throwing on Saturday night. That's going to be on the field on...
I'm going to back in North, actually. I'm going to take North.
All right, North for you. West Coast v. GWS at Domain Stadium. I'm going GWS because I am liking their game at the moment.
I'm going GWS because I'm going to jump on the bandwagon.
Good. Melbourne vs. Fury, easy one at MCG. Fremantle will win by 50-plus points against the Ds. Sorry,
Brianna. I think it'll be a little bit closer than that. Freo don't often get to the MCG. Melbourne.
That's true.
Okay, they're running a little bit high at the moment. And I think it will be interesting to see if Burnie goes to Fife, because even though they might look at that matchup and tag, I think just the height discrepancy between the two will be quite a big factor.
Would he go to Fife, I reckon?
We'd have to start there, wouldn't he?
You'd have to start there.
Who else would you start? Because it's not going to be any better if he goes to Maine or Mundy.
Yeah, no, he'd go to Fife.
So you'd have to go to Fife. Yeah. Having said that, look, I think Freo will win by 20 points in this one.
Yeah, St Kilda v Essendon at Etihad Stadium. Essendon pretty poor last week. They were up, no down. Probably should have won that game, I reckon.
Yeah, maybe.
I'm going the Bombers.
Yeah, so, I'll go the Bombers
I'll
as well.
I'll back them again.
I'll go the Bombers as well.
Saints
and then Adelaide, Port Adelaide, Adelaide Oval. Sean, can you bounce back?
If Port Adelaide play half as good as they did on Saturday night, they will still absolutely belt the Crows. And I hope they do, because I hope the Crows wake up. But Port Adelaide's going to win this one.
Yeah, that's a fair enough call. I think Port's the obvious choice. Obviously, they only played half a game last week and they still got the W.
Over Adelaide Oval as well. It's a Crows home game, but they're still at Adelaide and they're still going to win.
Yeah, look, and we hope Adelaide delivers something a little bit better. You think that Phil Walsh will get into them this week? Well, you'd hope so, wouldn't you? And that, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, is your dose of the 6 points for another week. Anything to say, Sean, before I head off and get a kebab?
Yeah, big games. Don't watch Gold Coast Suns and Brisbane because it's going to be a shocker.
You should watch the Adelaide Port Adelaide game.
Yeah, watch it.
They're always close clashes, regardless, so definitely get onto that one. Right, don't forget to follow us on Twitter, like us on Facebook, or send us an email if you have anything you would like to contribute to the show. Or even if you don't, even if you just want to send Bulldogs merchandise in and get Sean to pose for it for our Facebook page, that'll be great as well. On behalf of myself, Robert Beaver, and my co-host, Sean Subra, thanks for giving us a listen. Go out, enjoy the footy this coming weekend, and we'll be back to break it all down next Tuesday. We'll see you then.
Murdoch University is the provider of resources and transmission facilities for the 6 Points podcast. The views expressed on the show are those of the individual and not necessarily those of Murdoch University or Radio Murdoch. All views expressed are those of the individual unless otherwise stated.